Blog Talk Radio.
Peace and blessings, family. Welcome to the Black Womaniverse. This is Goddess Seek Wisdom, along with Black Magic and Empress Conspiracy. How y'all doing today, sisters?
Good. How are you?
Greetings. All right. We're going to do our libations. And, of course, we have a guest that is coming on today that I cannot wait to get on the line, because this sister has some powerful information to share with the queens who will be listening today. So let's go ahead and get with our libation so we can get her online.
Well, all right. We come forth today to ask for guidance and protection from the ancestors. We pay homage to them. I want to explain real quick before we, you know, do that part that we are here at the Order Mayotte, say Mayotte, because it brings forth balance. It represents reciprocity. It represents order. And so we say Mayotte in place of Ashe, not necessarily in place, but, you know, after we call for the spirits of our ancestors, more so to call upon the essence of Mayotte.
Right, the balance.
Right, so we can maintain that balance and that order in the things that we're trying to accomplish. So, with that being said, Sister Ida B. Wells,
Mayotte. Miriam Makaba.
Mayotte.
Mayor
McLeod,
Mayotte.
Mayotte,
both of those. I have Tubman.
Mayotte.
Mayat.
Sojourner True.
Mayat. Fannie Lou Hamer.
Mayat.
Mayat for both of those. Coretta Scott King.
Mayat.
Nzinga.
Mayat. To all the queens that came before us and all the queens that come through us, we pay homage and we give thanks. Mayat.
Mayat. All right, let's see. Our guest today, and I hope I am pronouncing her name correctly. If I am not, please forgive me and please correct me. Lydia Mina.
Hey, you did it absolutely correctly. I don't have to correct you at all.
Mm-hmm. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I have a question, though. I want to tap in with the other line. I have two lines that I'm connected to right now.
Okay.
And I want to get off the cell phone because I know that that's the number you're familiar with, which is why I called in at first and
the
get on the landline. Yes, the 678
okay.
number. Yeah, do that.
All
okay.
right. I unmuted it. Okay.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, very
See
well.
You very well.
Oh, great. Okay. Yes, so how are you?
I am great. I'm great, and I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of the Black Womaniverse for you taking your time out to speak with us today.
Well, you know, because of the women, it's, to me it's not taking time out. This is part of my work, is being of service to the women in our community, especially in regards to birthing. Since I am known as a birthing activist, this is my work. This is what I'm born to do in order to help bring these gods forth, you know?
Yes, indeed. Could you give us
thank you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to thank you for allowing me to be present here today.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Could you give us a little background on yourself for those who are not familiar with you, you know, what you do and how you have come into the work that you do for women?
Okay, well, the background on myself is that I am a mother of five children. My oldest is 34. My youngest will be 12. And each time I became pregnant, I always wanted to know more about the birthing. I felt like there wasn't enough being taught to women. And I was fortunate to have my grandmother talk to me when I was a little girl. And I'm thankful that I listened to her. Oftentimes we say that our elders talk too much or they always got something to say about things. But my listening to her, though I may not have appreciated it when I was young, when I got to be of, childbearing age, I very much appreciated my grandmother and start really honoring her more because my first child, I was told that I would have to have a C-section. And just because, you know, it was my first child. And because I had listened to my grandmother, I was more afraid of going under the knife and not being conscious of what's going on than to hear my grandmother say that she had seven children and she had them all at home. And she never once talked about fear. She only told me what I needed to do when I was pregnant, which was walk. She said, walk and eat healthy and that I could have my babies. And so I listened to her instead of listening to the doctors who wanted to cut or the doctors who did not believe in birthing. And even today, they do not believe a woman can have a natural childbirth. So my background is, first of all, going through the experiences that I did, learning from them, and then helping other women who may not have known about how to deal with certain challenges. So I started studying. I had my children, taught them, and then got involved with, giving birth, helping other women give birth because of a doctor who, when I was having my third daughter, she said during my labor that I made it seem so easy that I should teach other women. And she said this while I'm in like a whole other phase, because at one point in labor, you go into a whole different dimension, a whole different mindset. It's like you're on a different consciousness level.
Mm-hmm.
And in that phase, I heard her say that, and there was no pain while I was hearing her say that. And it was just about a moment of relaxation to gather myself to go ahead and push the baby out. And there was no pressure. So I was able to focus inward instead of focus on what was going on outside of me. And at that point, I said, wow, you know, I think I really would like to teach. I had learned a lot from having my other children and learned from my, you know, what you say, so-called negative experiences. But I look at them now as being, I had to go through it in order to teach others who may not have done the research and understood what was going on. And that goes for, like, back labor or different positions. And, you know, I was even tied down once, you know, with my hands to the bed. So those things actually do happen to women. And I was, and it was during a time with my first child, who is 34, that I realized that women don't have a lot of control over their bodies. When we give our power away to the doctors, anything can happen. And during the years of the early 70s, a lot was happening to women without their control, being mutilated, being sterilized. Some of the women in the southern parts of the United States, as well as the indigenous, indigenous Americans or people here, were being sterilized during that time. And I had heard about that, and the last thing I wanted to be was knocked out and not know what was going on with my body.
Right.
So from there, I wanted women to have the babies naturally but not to be in pain. I never believed that a woman had to be in pain. And even though I had pain with my first one, I still thought that it was something not right about it. And so that's why I always studied. Each time I had a pregnancy, I studied more and more so I can get to the bottom of, well, what did the pain come from, so we can eliminate those reasons. So each birth got better, and each one I learned different techniques, and then also was able to help other women along the way. And because I didn't want women to be martyrs, I learned about essential oils. I learned about massage therapy in order to help women. And I got with really good teachers in the Oakland Bay Area, California, that taught me. And I learned from the experience of going to births with them and having even my own, because I wanted to have my children at home, but I was afraid with the first four. I didn't know enough. And by the time I got to be 41 and was expecting my my last child, I was more afraid of the hospitals. So I wanted to, I took a midwifery course just so that I could learn what to do for myself. And that was very, very helpful. Because, you know, when you're over 35, I think probably even 30s now, they put you on a high risk. And they don't expect you to be able to have the babies by yourself. So massage therapy, aromatherapy, food therapy, even crystal therapy, all that I learned how to use just so I could help women have babies. And now I am a HIV prevention intervention educator. And that came about, I remember as a teenager saying that I wanted to teach about reproductive health for sex class, as we called it back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel that what I was getting at the time, I went to Berkeley High School in Berkeley, California, that, yes, it was very liberal, but it wasn't enough information as far as how we can be more in control of our bodies and how we can prevent diseases just from being aware of what's going on, especially as females. And I had forgotten about that, totally forgot about that, you know, that I wanted to do that. But it's amazing how when we think, we put things out into the universe, it comes back to us. Things are lining themselves up to help us with whatever it is that we say we wanted to do, which is why we have to be really careful about what we say we want, because
Yes. The
universe never forgets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when I came to Atlanta and thought I was going to be doing midwifery work and doula work and all that, and I did a few cases. I do more childbirth education here, but because the laws were different than California, I decided with certain things I was going to do and wasn't going to do anyway once I got to Atlanta. But it was interesting how certain doors just closed for me in that way, but other doors opened up where I got a chance to teach teenagers. And thought I would never go to the jails and the prisons, but being on the radio here on WRC 89.3 with Matt Time Jazz, Juanita Kimmy Tehudi Shabazz, influenced me a lot as far as certain choices I needed to make when I was faced with it. And I had said one time that I would never go to the jails, never go to the prison, because I had a traumatic experience for myself in high school when I did a Kwanzaa event at one of the penitentiaries, and I didn't like the feeling of being locked in, locked down, just even going as a guest. But when it came time to teach the teens, and I had to realize that I had to go into the prisons to teach them and the women, you know, it was like, okay, you can do this. You know, I have support in it. You can do this. And now that I've been doing it for about 8 years, I have my best, I say, participants in the detention centers, where the boys have been labeled as being so horrible. And, yes, some of them have murdered people. Yes, some of them have committed armed robbery, and they've done a lot of other things. But they are still some of the best children that we have. They just need guidance, and we need to be able to speak with them and reach out to them and help them the way our elders used to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And then helping the women and the teens and group homes and all that. And I realized that a lot of my midwifery background helped me to help these youth that were incarcerated, that were in group homes, to understand who they were. And because I understood what birth meant and what happens to women and what happens to the babies inside of the mothers, what they're thinking and how this affects the child. And so some of the groups I would actually show the birth and what is said to mother, how mother is affected, and would have some of the biggest boys, these biggest young men, real buff, you know, break down and cry because it touched them. They now understood where all their anger came from. And using, of course, I call it numerology, aromatherapy, using the numbers to help them also to understand who they are and what their journey and their path is, so that they can be empowered and get on the right track. I think I said quite a bit, didn't I?
Wow. That's all I have to say on that one. I mean, the question then becomes, what haven't you done?
Well,
wow. I mean, the experiences that you have mean a lot to us and mean a lot to the community. The work that you've done, the outreach, it's amazing. So I just want to, you know, say thank you for everything that you've been doing in the community, you know, where you are, and other communities that you've touched.
Good, thanks. It's my reason for being. I can't see doing anything else, you know? And, you know, and what I've learned along the way is that everything that we get involved in is a building. It's a stepping stone towards something else, right? Teaching HIV prevention and, you know, reproductive health, I didn't have any idea that when I was learning about midwifery that I would be drawn more in that experience than I am, you know, from the training that I received from CDC or some of the other agencies. I think my background in midwifery and in, you know, even in massage therapy has been a good foundation. And I must say also, being a member of the Nation of Islam has also helped me, because it directed me in, you know, what to, you know, where to go, where to stay away from, and, you know, what guidance to use. And it's allowed me to, like they say, have friendships in all walks of life, because I deal not only with our community, I deal with, you know, the black community at large, you know, whether it's Israelites or, you know, the gods on earth, or, you know, Nation of Islam, you know, the Christian community, you know, all of the communities. And even, you know, in California, now Atlanta's a little different, but in California I even had clients from the Asian community, the Hispanic community, you know, because we were a little bit, how you say, we were more integrated, I say, in the California Bay Area. But I'm in Atlanta now, so when I first moved out here, I'm like, okay, well, where's the Asians? I see them when I'm in the detention centers. I see the Hispanic brothers there. I'm like, well, where's everybody? It's really different out here, and I've learned to appreciate that as well. It's a whole different flavor. So I'm just thankful to be able to touch people in different places and to have them touch me, because I've learned a lot from those that I, you know, engage interaction with. You all are so quiet.
We're just, I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I'm just soaking up this information that you're giving us. We have a few questions, but before we start with questions, can you, it's a couple of different things we wanted you to speak about. First of all, could you, we're going to do this part again at the end of the show, but could you give everyone your website information?
Okay.
So they can be able to access your website and things of that nature?
I have two websites. My first website that I like to give to the general public is called Empowerment by LifePathAwakening.com. And that's Empowerment by LifePathAwakening. So that's Empowerment by Life Path Awakening. That's for the general public. For those who want to know more extensive information about me and are not afraid to tap in, that would be arisingpieceofart.com. And that is arisingpieceofart.com. And that gives a little bit more information about the birthing classes and, you know, the other work that I do is listed in pictures and all that.
Okay.
And the reason why I say, you know, for those who are not afraid, because I'm dealing with mainstream people as well. And I think for some of them, in fact, I've been told my Rising Piece of Art website is a little too much for some folks. But the general information on Empowerment by Life Path Awakening has just some basic things and doesn't go in too much into detail about my work. And still you have people that don't understand about how numerology or numerology, as some people call it, or the essential oils. And I've been called a witch in my day, you know. And so for the general public, you know, go to that Empowerment by Life Path Awakening. And once you're comfortable with that one, then you venture out to the Rising Piece of Art one. Are you pulling it out? Y'all so quiet. I'm not used to all this silence. No, I've been doing it for a while.
Well, let's go ahead and get into, like, one thing we wanted you to speak about was having children at home versus the hospital. You know, some women have are, you know, a little apprehensive in terms of the safety precautions. They think it's more safe to have their babies at the hospital versus the home. Could you touch on that, the safety issue, to kind of ease the minds of some of the women who are interested in having their children at home but are a little scared because of the safety issues?
The thing about how I teach is that you do an interview. You do an interview of your midwife. You do an interview of the doctor. Anybody that you're going to have assist you in the birth, interview them to find out where their mind is, what is their take on birth. You want someone who understands that birth is a natural process. And when I say midwife, I'm not talking about certified nurse midwives. They are good, and I have met some good certified nurse midwives. But it seems to me that over the past few years, they've become more like the doctors have become. And there are some good doctors as well. But what we call, as far as home birth, there's a magic to it. And the magic is we understand the naturalness of the body. And mm-hmm. we allow the body to open up. And we support the body in the process, the woman herself, in opening up, which means to support her in relaxing, not to stress her out. Yes, we monitor the baby's heart rate, and we monitor all the other, you know, her heart rate, her blood pressure, we monitor all that so that we can know if there's a, you know, there's a risk involved. And of course, during the pregnancy, you also have your prenatal visits. It's not like you just pop up and call a midwife, oh, I'm in labor, come help me. That's not how we do it. The way that we do it is you meet your midwife in your earlier part, as soon as you find out you're pregnant, just like, you know, with a doctor, and she talks to you, and she helps you to understand what the birthing process is. She gets an idea of what you want, you know, because you will share with her. She gets to know your family, your environment, you know, and she gets a chance to see how you eat and how you live. And it's very personal. It's not like what I've been seeing. And I had always told women not to watch those birthing channels. And the last, this last month, I actually sat down and watched the birthing channel. And I was amazed at what they call natural childbirth. I'm like totally different than what I see. You know, I'm seeing a woman on her back. She's not being taught how to breathe properly. And it still looks like a controlled, environment not for her, but for those that are assisting her, the doctors and the nurse, not so much for the woman. So I see why people are looking at these programs and are afraid of birth. And when we're afraid of birth, we're afraid of death, too, because it's all a cycle, it's all a circle. And times back in my grandmother's day, and I'm 53, so my grandmother, you know, she was born in 1913, and she used to tell me, as a little girl all about her mother, her grandparents, and there wasn't the fear of death because you had, you know, the family was with the person when they were giving birth. The family was with the person when they were, you know, going back or transitioning back, you know, to that other dimension. So we had a more understanding of each other. Now we're so disconnected. And, you know, in the hospital, is this mystique about it. We want to separate everybody. And I'm not one of those birthing care person that believe that all men should be in the room, because some men you don't want in the room. Some of them are very, very helpful, and they bring that calming energy, and they're able to hold her hand or say I love you and touch her. And some of them are even able to cut the umbilical cord and, you know, and all that. Then you have others who might pass out and have passed out, and you have others who, like, oh, it's taking too long. Go get the drugs. Oh, you really want to take the drugs. So you really got to assess also the brother. You know, is he ready, and what is his role? Does he understand his role? Because they can be present, but in a guided way. Then you have other men who are the midwives, you know, and if that's what they agree to, then that's wonderful also. However, I feel like it's woman's work, because another woman who's had a child knows what it feels like. The women who sometimes get weak in the process, they have that woman who's been through it to look up to and say, wow, you know, you've gone through this. I know you can help me. And when you tell me to push through it, I know you understand. Whereas someone else may tell her to push through and she may curse them out. Now, but mind you, I've gotten cursed out too. But I don't curl up and, you know, leave the room, because I understand that that's just the phase. She's going to come around and she's going to be different, because we go through rites of passage as we give birth. And that whole labor tells us a lot about ourselves, speaks to what we've been through. They have more cesareans because women don't open up because of some violation of their body that may have happened to them through incest or through rape or something else where they felt violated. These are the things they don't talk about in the hospital that midwives will talk to the woman about. And I find that talking to her about it before the birth helps us when we get to that place, because a lot of women don't even remember that they had that violation until they feel the sensations in their body. In a doctor's office or on the laboring room, they're not going to stop what they're doing to ask you if you've been raped before, if you've been violated. We can tell, because when they're doing exams and the woman is trying to get off that table and she's trying to backwards up that wall, that's the key to it. Midwives, okay, there's been some trauma there, and we'll talk her through it. Nurses oftentimes don't have time to do that, and they don't even recognize those signs, because from what I understand, they haven't been given that type of training. So it's about, okay, let's give you some drugs. You give the drugs, things slow down, okay? The baby is also drugged, and they find that the drugs can stay in the child's system, you know, up to 7 or 8 years after birth. So those are some of the issues, and then you were wondering why the children have difficulty with studying or difficulty with certain behaviors. We could trace it back to how they gave birth, how they came through the womb, and what some of the drugs may have been. So it's just a lot that goes on in the hospital. Now, I'm not against hospital birth. If there's an emergency or if the woman is high risk, yes, she should be there. But I think that just like anything else, the hospital is for sickness. Having a baby is not a sickness or an illness.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's so important that you say that that hospitals are for sickness, and that having a baby is not a sickness or illness.
It is not.
Wow.
You get sick when you're there. You treat it.
Yeah, you do. Look at what they feed you in most cases, but can you talk about the testing that the obstetricians and the midwives and the doctors want you to get while you're pregnant, like the ultrasounds, the Doppler test, the test to, you know, check to see if your child has Down syndrome and all of those. What are the precautions in reference to that? Harm to the mother, harm to the baby, whether it's physical and or spiritual. Can you touch on those?
Well, you know, the ultrasound I'm not a fan of. There have been cases where I talk to women, I say, okay, if this makes you feel comfortable, go ahead, you know. And that's been where women have had certain complications in previous pregnancies, and to ease their mind, they want to make sure, you know, like the placenta is not, you know, it's not placenta previa where the placenta is coming first, or, you know, some other complications they may have had, and to ease their minds, I said, okay, if that's what makes you comfortable, go ahead and check. Because it's all about making sure the mother is comfortable. Now, just ultrasounds in general, it's going to affect the baby. There's the waves that's coming across. And, you know, the ultrasounds were originally designed for in the water, submarines trying to detect if other equipment or other machines were in the water, too. So when the babies are waving back at you, they're actually trying to get those waves out of there because it's very uncomfortable for them. So there has been some studies that it has affected certain development depending on when the mother receives the ultrasound. So just not big on that. I think that if you want to hear the heartbeat, you know, my children have put their ears to the mother's stomach and heard the heartbeat, okay? So you don't necessarily have to have, even a Doppler has some rays involved in it. You can get a fetal scope and listen to the baby's heartbeat and know. And it's important to listen to the heartbeat because you want to know the rhythm. You want to know, you know, making sure that the right sounds are there, the right rhythm is there. Midwives do check with the fetal scope. Some have Dopplers, and the ones that I know that have Dopplers don't use them for very long. It may be during labor, and they put it on real fast and take it off very quickly. So some of the other tests for Down syndrome, you know, if you're eating right, if you're healthy, if you're living a healthy life, that lessens your amount of your risk for Down syndrome. In fact, sometimes they've done those amniocentesis. In fact, often they've done the amniocentesis and found and predicted that a child was going to be afflicted with some disease or Down syndrome, and found, and the mothers refused to abort the babies and found out those babies were just fine when they were born. So it's not 99%, how you say, for sure, that the test results that they give you back is true. And I say on a spiritual level, a person would have to think for themselves and decide, well, if you're going to go ahead and get that particular procedure done, what is going to be your, how you say, your mode of action afterwards? If you're not planning on abort, then why get the test done? I mean, because if you're going to go through with the pregnancy, why go through with the pregnancy thinking that you have a sick child? You know, not unless you're going to try to make some plans for it ahead of time or something. But if there's nothing yet you're going to change, why, from an emotional perspective and spiritual perspective, think on terms that your child is sick or your child has a problem? Because basically, if your child doesn't have that problem, you put that energy on the baby, because whatever mother thinks during the time that she's pregnant, she's imprinting on that child's brain. And mm-hmm. So when the baby comes out, you're working with something that already has an issue, a person that always has an issue, because you put that energy onto that child.
Wow.
So I'd like to know, you know, if there are mothers out there who did have a Down syndrome baby and, you know, going through the pregnancy because that's what they were told, how did it help them?
Mm. That would be some good information to have, you know, a mother who has gone through that. And
I guess, fortunately, in my practice, the times that I've been helping women, I've never had any of them had a child that I can remember that had any issues. I just can't remember any. And I'm definitely, none that were, you know, had Down syndrome. So there have been some who went along and did the test, and there have been some who said, well, you know, what would I do different? And because they couldn't think of anything they'd do different, they decided to forego those tests. Now, I can tell you, at the age that I was, at 41, they were definitely trying to test me for everything. And I had to look at, well, I'm healthy. My son's father was very healthy. He's a martial artist and, you know, fitness trainer. And because of the things that I was doing at the time, I was extremely healthy. And I saw no need to go through those different tests because I knew there would be nothing I would do different anyway. And I didn't want to think about, if the test came back positive, me having that on my brain for this child. I wanted to think on a higher level for the child that I was bringing to this world.
Right.
And, of course, they tried to pressure you. And the thing about when you're dealing with the doctors, when you're dealing with that establishment, don't deal with them from a place of emotion. You have to deal with them from a place where I've done my study, I've read up on this, I thank you for offering this test, but I respectfully will not be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Thank you
right.
so very much. Then they leave you alone. But if you come at it where you're emotional, like, you know, I don't know, but I just really don't feel like I want to do that, then they're going to try to wear you down. Same if you're planning on a natural childbirth. If you're not absolutely sure, they're going to wear you down, and then they're going to play on you, on your emotions, especially if you're a woman and you go there and your doctor, because they can be very patronizing by telling you, oh, everything you want is absolutely going to happen. You want a water birth? Yes, we're going to do that. We're going to have a tub, you know, whatever you want. And then you get in there the last month where you feel like you can't change doctors. They're like, well, we can't do that, or we won't be doing this. But all along, they kind of strung you along. I've had lawyers as clients, and they've had friends who were doctors, and they were amazed. I had warned them about what would happen just prior to them having a baby. And they didn't believe me until they were faced with it and like, wow, I never thought that she would do that to me. And it was a friend as well as a doctor.
Wow.
But this was a lawyer. I mean, these were like, you know, professional people. So it happens to no matter what your place in life is, no matter what your occupation is, it happens the same way to every woman. It doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. You're faced with the same thing when you go into these, you know, these places that institutionalize, you know, birthing and how women are to be cared for. So one of the things, you know, they'll ask you is to, let's see, take the other test. Now, I do like the blood test part. Now, getting your hemoglobin and, how you say, hematocrit, it's important because you do want to know what your levels are. Because some women, you know, we have these TV shows that make fun of birth or the pregnancy or this drama, the woman passes out or the girl passes out, and everyone knows she's pregnant now. You know, do they still have movies like that?
Yes.
I know they had those when I was growing up. You know, it's like, and I know Martin, you know, the woman pushed so hard, push, and the baby flew across the room. I know it was one show.
Yeah.
It's absolutely uncomfortable. You don't want to push the baby out like that. You want to take your time. And those are things that you learn during pregnancy, how to control your body. But the
right.
thing about passing out is a lack of iron. And that's why nutrition is so important. And the training that I received under my midwifery training was nutrition was very key. That was almost more important than anything else. Because
mm-hmm.
we charted women, you know, and we wanted to make sure, because see, midwives are still prosecuted. Home birth midwives, you know, we're still fighting for recognition and respect, you know, in the work that we do. I know some of the states it may be, you know, legal now, but still, if someone comes under the care of a midwife and things should happen, a baby should die, or the woman should have complications, she died, you know, the first thing they want to do is lock up the midwife. So this is what I learned during my training. And so, and I still know midwives who work underground and not, you know, above the eye in front of everyone. Although, you know, they're trying to make some changes in the political structure. But the thing about a woman having to eat properly is key, because she'll have a healthier pregnancy and reduces the risk at the end of the pregnancy and in her term, and the baby is healthier. And also, the couples will get along better. Because sometimes the woman is so mean during the pregnancy, and the guys are like, whoa, she wasn't like this before the pregnancy, and I'm getting out of this relationship after this baby born. Because they don't understand, and there's not a lot of men that can talk to other men to help them to understand what's going on. And the main thing is that when you have a lack of iron, and you're tired, and you're irritable, all that are symptoms of anemia, but it's the lack of the iron and enough oxygen to the brain, and you're a little snappy, you're a little sharp, you know, you're not as friendly, you know, with your family or your partner, and all it is she needs more iron. She'll stop having those headaches, she'll be nicer, her memory will come back, you know. That's all she needs, some iron.
So what would a proper diet consist of during you know, during pregnancy and as far as preconception, whether they're vegan, vegetarian, or whether they do eat meat, what would the diets consist of in order for the mother and the father to be healthy?
Well, the important thing would be to make sure that she's getting her iron, they're getting their iron, like preconception is very key, getting the body ready, at least, you know, 9 months to a year before conception, you know, getting rid of the other, you know, the drugs in the system, whether it's marijuana, cocaine, crack, whatever the drug of choice is, you know, alcohol, tobacco, try to get rid of those things, prescription drugs, any of that stuff. You know, try to get all, you know, deal with your body in a way that you don't rely on those substances. And the first thing I always start with is iron, making sure that she has enough iron for the blood, ensures a healthy vitality and reasoning and memory, making sure that calcium is there, because calcium is your painkiller. You remember earlier I said that there's reasons for pain. One of the things is not having enough calcium in your system. And for people who are vegetarian or vegan or, you know, who've cut out the dairy, you have to substitute the dairy with other calcium sources. Oftentimes when we become vegetarian, we want to let go of the meat, we want to let go of the dairy, you know, the fish and all that, but we don't replace it with proper nutrients that complement, okay? So you can't just get rid of something without replacing it. So the calcium is for even for women who have cramps, you know, menstrual cramps and all, and helps with the labor pains. It helps with reducing those labor pains. It helps with afterbirth pains, you know. And so you want it also helps with the clotting of the blood. And you have broccoli, which is very rich in calcium. Although right after you have the baby, you don't want to really do too much calcium because it gives some gas. You want to wait, you know, after the 6 week period before you introduce the broccoli, because if you're going to breastfeed. But then you have also sesame seeds, spirulina, sunkerella. Hijiki is one of the highest forms of plant calcium, and hijiki is, how you say, a sea vegetable. You have blackstrap molasses for the calcium. And also cattle juice. There's more calcium in cattle juice than there is in a glass of cow's milk. So we wanted to do that. And then you have, like I said earlier, the iron. You can get that in your beet greens, also your blackstrap molasses. It's very rich in iron, alfalfa. Nettles, dandelion, greens, all those are really good. And then you want to make sure that your protein, because you need the protein for growth and brain function. And you're getting rid of the animal products, you want to substitute it with plenty of beans, especially your small white, small red navy beans, your lentils. You want to increase your avocados, which is rich in protein. Your broccoli is also rich in protein, your corn tortillas. And so there's so much, even oatmeal, papayas, quinoa, which is a grain. So those are the three main things that I look at for pregnancy. And also your vitamin C's, of course, and your regular B12, which they say, how you say, vegetarians have a challenge with. But the alfalfa is rich in B12, and your spirulina is rich in B12. So you can do those, and also your duals, your kelp. You want to get okra, lentils again. So basically, there, you know, if you go to my website, arisingpieceofart.com, I have a whole list of nutritious foods under each of the vitamins and minerals that they can get the whole list from. Are you there?
Yes, we are here. thank you so much for that. I mean, wow.
We just taking notes, that's all.
Yeah, because I'm writing things down. I'm definitely writing things down. Let's see. What about breastfeeding and lactation and breast care during pregnancy and after pregnancy, obviously?
Well, during pregnancy, you don't want to put any soap or lotions on your nipples. You want to let the shower toughen your nipples up, and you want to let also your partner squeeze those nipples or suck on those nipples too, although whatever he does is not going to match what the baby does, you know, so what he's doing is just preparation. And because you want your nipples to be supple, so that's why you don't put the lotion on there. You don't want them to crack or anything, but you can put vitamin E on the nipples, and some women have used hydrocephalus for the nipples, which makes them tougher but supple, okay? You can even pull them occasionally. And also, you might want to buy, a bra, a nursing bra, where you can let the flaps down so that during the day, you can let the flaps down and let the toughness of your blouse rub against the nipples. And if you have a little area where you have sun that comes in, you have a little private area, you can have the sun come on your nipples too. And that preparing your nipples is so key because, you know, there are many people that I've heard, even some midwives say, oh, you don't have to prepare your nipples. It'll be ready when baby comes. And oftentimes I found that mothers who did not prepare and didn't know that they shouldn't put anything on their nipples, they had a very challenging time with breastfeeding. They complained about the pain. They complained about the nipples cracking and all that. And I must say, too, like after I had my first child, I was told that, okay, with the second one, you don't have to prepare them. And I didn't prepare for my second one. They were only like 21 months apart. And I suffered. So I said, never again. I would, for, you know, now on, make sure that that I do prepare my nipples. So all of my children during the pregnancy, I prepare each one. The other thing is, for preparation for the nipples, for breastfeeding, eating healthy. You want to make sure, again, that you get enough protein because that also helps with the breast. It helps with the amniotic fluid as well. Mm-hmm. And so you want to do quite the preparation basically is understanding how to toughen those nipples up and to know that when a baby latches on, it's going to be a lot of pressure because their jaws are going to be, you know, how you say it, sucking so that you're going to feel it. And if you're not ready, if you haven't planned for it, some women have actually cried during that process, and crying during that process, they had to decide whether or not they were committed to the breastfeeding or not. And so some women made it through, you know, the cracked nipples, and, you know, they took 2 weeks, you know, they had to use breast shields, so those help, the breast shields do help, and they had to wait. And they found out that they felt a lot better, that they did still go through with it rather than not do it. And for those who had a challenging time, it's because they didn't have the support and the help to get them through it. It wasn't anything wrong with them. They probably they didn't know that they had to prepare the nipples. Okay? It's like you got to prepare everything. You got to prepare your vagina to have a baby. You got to, you know, you got to look at each area that's going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to massage. You know, you got to do relaxation exercises. You know, tension and relaxation exercises, so you know what muscles you're working with and how to relieve yourself. Because, like I said earlier, there's pain and there's reasons for it. Let's eliminate the reasons for the pain of breastfeeding or the reason, you know, when we have these babies. Because you know, that Adam and Eve story, I just don't buy into that.
Yeah. I agree.
and who gives us that story all the time? You know, men real quick to tell you what kind of pain you're supposed to go through.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how would they know?
Really, but, you know, we're in a female body. And, you know, we often allow our brothers to tell us how to deal with our bodies. But we're not often consulted about how to deal with theirs. You know, we don't make decisions.
Wow, that is so true.
Yeah, so I think that women, you know, empowered, and when you're empowered about your own body, I've had so many women that, number one, they're not having orgasms, and I do talk about that. Orgasms are very important because it would help you to know how to deal with your body during labor. And it also releases endorphins into the body, which help to relax you. Those are pleasure hormones. And when the mother's happy, the baby's happy. So I'm not the midwife that says don't have sex during pregnancy. I'm the midwife that tells you do have sex during pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to be jumping off the walls. And
I like her.
Not that kind, okay? not that kind. Because, you know, there's another party involved, so you want to be gentle about it. But the thing is, if you can be on top and know how to release those sounds and, you know, be empowered that way, then when it comes time to having that baby, you're going to use that same energy. And a lot of midwives will tell you having a baby is a lot like having sex, okay?
Wow.
Because you're calling on that energy. And when the brother breeze in your ear. It relaxes you during the sexual activity. It also relaxes you when he's holding your hand during labor and he breathes in your ear. You also relax, and that helps to open up the womb for the baby to come out. So there's a definite connection. It's important that she is calm. It's important that the natural oxytocin is coming out. With him, the prostaglandin hormone helps to soften her cervix. So even when she's late or late for days, as they say, past dates, the one thing that we were taught to do is to have the husband and wife get busy with sexual activity, because his sperm, or how you say, his semen has the hormones in it that will help to soften her cervix. Because the thing that they used to do back in the day, and I'm sure they probably still do, is they get this little cream. They have the woman come in 24 hours before they plan to have her deliver the baby, and during that night they'll put a cream on her cervix, and the cream has semen from a bull. So I'm like, okay, if they're gonna use an animal, why not use your husband?
You.
Right. I didn't know they did that. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting.
You know. Isn't the semen very, well, they try, a lot of, when they give you Pitocin, they're trying to, that's a chemical or a chemical man-made substance that they try to give you to do the same thing that is inside of the man's semen, which makes the, kind of progresses the childbirth. Is that correct?
Yes, you know, because when you have an orgasm, when the orgasm comes, you're actually producing natural oxytocin, which helps to stimulate the labor as well. So that's why you say, you know, certain, now, if the baby's not ready to come, you're not in danger. Now, if you've been put on bed rest, or if you have you're high risk for preterm labor, then you do not have sex, because it will stimulate the contractions, okay? But if you have a pregnancy, go ahead and be sexual with your partner and get used to that. Now, when they're in labor, I've had women their labors have slowed down. And what I've done was to put a sheet over them and ask their partner to sit on the bed behind them. And this is whether it's a home birth or a hospital birth. And I tell him to start massaging her nipples. And when he starts massaging her nipples, the oxytocin naturally in her body will start stimulating those contractions. They get a lot stronger. Now, they don't like you to do that in the hospital because they cannot monitor how much oxytocin her body is releasing. Okay? See, with Pitocin, they got that little drip going on. And that
right.
You can measure it and all that. But see, when you're massaging the nipples, they can't measure how much oxytocin is flowing through her body. They can tell that it's flowing because then they see that when they look on the monitor, those contractions are a whole lot stronger than what they were. Then they get afraid because they don't want it to be too much. So what I say to them is, okay, we'll work on that. And when a nurse leaves, I talk to him. I say, okay, instead of two breaths, do one. Okay? So now we're going to slow that flow of oxytocin down so that they're more comfortable with what's flowing through her body and the intensity of what's happening. So, yeah, we work with that. And I always tell, you know, although I prefer home births, I don't judge or condemn women who want to have the hospital birth, because women have to have the babies the way they want to, the way they're comfortable. It's such a powerful mind-body connection. And the important thing is to make sure that the woman, it's her choice. If she's having a home birth because her partner wants her to have it, because he wants her to be this, you know, roots woman, or she feels like she has to prove to the other women in the community that she can have this baby because she's on climbing these mountains, she's on strapped a rifle, and she's on all that stuff. Hey, I gotta have this baby too at home. But she really doesn't want to, she's afraid. Her labor's gonna stall, you know? And her labor's gonna be a little challenging, more challenging. And she's gonna be resistant. And I've known women that's happened to. And the things I've learned over the years, and because I was all this gung-ho person, like, hey, we're gonna have this baby natural. Well, you know what? I felt like I had the baby natural. They were just there because I'm going through all the work, and they weren't into it. And I realized that as a person that supports women, it's not my experience. It's their experience. And for me to have to work that hard, it was pointless, because we have to understand what does the woman want. And I have to talk to her alone, away from her peers, away from her partner to, like, let's get down with what you really want and what your fears are. We can try to remove those fears, depending on what they're based on. We can do some exploration. But if it's just the fact that, hey, you're just not ready, well, you're not ready. Because I've had women that have been in labor for a week at home, and the midwives, two and three midwives, came to visit them at home. And I said, okay, I know what this is. You know, the environment's not right at home. Because when you're talking about having a child at home, don't have the sports playing on TV. Don't have dogs walking through barking. Don't have little children, you know, that she has to tell them to stop touching this. Hey, the environment. And that's why some women are like, I'll go to the hospital. Because I can't touch there. You know, so when we talk about having these babies at home, we still have to provide that sacred space. Make sure that she's going to be cared for after she has that baby. Somebody should be there. Not just a day, you know, not just a week, but, you know, she needs to be taken care of, you know, like 6 weeks, you know, at least. And then make sure that there's food there for her so she doesn't have to get up and cook or clean or wash clothes because her body really is not ready for that. And I know some women feel like, hey, you know, I had this baby, you know, I'm 16, I'm going to the store tomorrow, because they feel like that. Well, yeah, you do that at 16. But when you get to be 50 or, you know, maybe even 45, when your uterus starts falling out your vagina, we don't look back at what did you do after you had that baby. And that's one of the main concerns I have today is that women, yeah, you feel good, and that's a wonderful thing, but we can't feel good and be taken care of. We have to be broken down for someone to say, well, I will help you. Because if you look too good, and I have to tell some of the women, I know you feel good, you're doing a great job, but don't let your partner see you getting up. Because if he sees you getting up, all your help is going to stop. And that's sad to say that, but it's true. You know, or even in-laws or other people that come around, because, you know, we still talking about, well, my grandmother had 7 babies and she did it by herself and she was at Master's house the next day, you know, or she was out in the field.
It's that expectation. Just because we can't do it, they expect us to do it, so they don't offer as much help.
Exactly. And so as women, our bodies break down. You know, we got too many women. We have female problems later on in our lives, and we don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So I like to talk about why we have the problems so that we can eliminate those here while we're healthy, while we're still young enough to do it, and so that we don't have those complications when we're older. You know, and so these things are very, very real. If you don't take care of your body during pregnancy and right after you have that baby, it hits you when you're older. You know, the incontinence, you know, I don't know if y'all notice this, but when I go into the stores, I see more adult diapers than I've ever seen before, almost as much as you have female sanitary napkins.
Mm-hmm.
That's for incontinence. That's for people who cannot hold their urine or cannot hold their feces.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know how to push, when you're having that baby, that's why I say it's women's work. Because you can have someone help you during labor. And they say, oh, women have always had babies. Yeah, babies always come out. But it's the way we have these children. And the mother's body has to be honored and protected and, you know, guided in a proper way. If you're pushing, this is you and your partner, and he read a book, and that book tells him everything to do. So when she's in labor, you know, she's probably not going to be a regular book case. You know, most of us are not. It's going to be a time where she shouldn't push right now. But we're telling her to go ahead and push because we're not understanding where she's not 10 centimeters. And, she feels like pushing. She said it feels like she got to push, but we told her to push. But so you got to know how to breathe at that moment to allow your body still to open up because the perineum and the vagina still hasn't opened up all the way. So even though you feel like pushing, you got to know how to pant, that panting breath, to allow your body to catch up. Because that nerve, the baby's touching on the nerve, which is telling you to start bearing down, but still the body's not ready yet. It hasn't stretched the way it should yet. But if you start pushing, and you go ahead and you have that baby, you know, that's going to be some pain right there, number one. But yeah, the baby's going to come out. But now you got another problem. You don't have control over those muscles like you had before. And this is why I say women's work, because women know what that feels like, especially women who have had natural birth. You know, or women who are pro-natural birth. Now, there's some women in the hospital, nurses, that I had to check them out first to say, okay, I learned not to tell them I was a doula or a midwife because then we're going to war for sure. But I'd feel them out first to see if it was one who was supportive of natural birth or not. And once I could feel whether that's what they were, then I could share with them some things. But if they're against it, then they're going to do everything to oppose you. So that's why it's important to you know, to ask questions. It's important to have your doula or your midwife, if you're going to have it in a hospital and it's not, you know, the regular hospital that your doula or midwife goes to, take them with you to meet the hospital staff. Take them on that hospital tour. When you're meeting with your midwife, ask them questions about how they really feel. Do they feel like they're supposed to be in pain? You know, not all midwives teach breathing. So you want to find out, is it one that teaches you how to breathe properly? Because there's different breathing techniques. I'm the kind of person that says, look, give me all the tools I need, and when the time comes, I'll decide, you know, based on the choices before me, which one that I'll, you know, make a decision on, right? I'm not the type to say, well, I'll watch you run around and you'll get it in a moment, you know, because I've seen videos of midwives like, oh, she's just running around the room. She'll find out how to breathe in a minute. I think that's so cruel, because I wouldn't want nobody to do me like that. Tell me what to do, you know?
Wow.
I want to practice. I'm just saying, you have to know who you're dealing with and how they're going to deal with you. Have your plan ready. You know, what is it that you want? And so that when you're faced with certain decisions, you can have the people that's going to be supportive of you know what your plan is. So you want to have copies of your plan, whether it's a home birth or a hospital birth. And you want to have a midwife. You're having a home birth. You want to have a midwife that you trust totally. You want to have a midwife that's committed to you. You want to make sure that they're not going on vacation when it's your due date. And if an emergency comes up, they got backup. Because there's nothing
right.
worse than planning to have a midwife, and now you're faced with going to the hospital, and you never went on a hospital tour. You don't know anything about that environment, but now you're forced to do that because your plans for your midwife fell through. So you want to make sure that she's not working alone, okay? You want to make sure that she knows you, your family, the relationship, because, see, sometimes midwives have to ask people to leave the room. And your birthing party may not like that. They may not like the fact that they were asked to leave the room because the midwife said they're causing the woman too much stress. They've been
right.
arguments in labor. You know, that's
wow.
what, that
yeah.
was called labor. The woman just locks up. And they're
mm-hmm.
saying, oh, well, something's wrong with her body. She didn't. There was some unresolved issues. And it came
right.
up during the labor. That
right.
will create a C-section. That will create a challenging birth. Okay?
Can you...
So midwives are trained and doulas are trained to look at where the stresses are. And they may say, well, you know, I know your partner loves his mom, but right now, that's the last person that should be in this room.
Oh, man. Now, that's funny.
Lydia, could you touch on some relaxation techniques such as massage and or aromatherapy that can be used during, you know, during pregnancy leading up to labor and during the labor process
okay.
or childbirth process, rather?
Okay. Well, excuse me. During pregnancy, I have women learn how to do the breathing, relaxation breathing. The Om sound is so perfect because the Om is the sound, they say, of the universe when everything is still. And it creates such relaxation in the body. If you can really get that pitch, and I have women not scream. You can't scream during the labor, okay, because it scares the baby, it scares everybody. you may want to make some sounds, but the low pitch sounds is what's going to relax the body and get you through the labor. And also, it allows for the internal organs to be massaged. Just doing that Om sound, and I have them make it and practice making the sound as loud as the room. You know, you want to make it real big. Because when you make it real big, it's also a pain reliever. It stimulates endorphins in the body and massages the organs inside. And the baby likes to ride that energy down. So the Om sound is very important to practice during the pregnancy. And just sitting down and have your partner, like, you know, for the most part, the woman should practice the breathing techniques, relaxation techniques about 3 times a day so that when she goes into labor, she's very relaxed and she'll remember. Now, we forget a lot in labor. So if you know how to do it during a pregnancy, then when someone reminds you, like, wait a minute, remember you're supposed to breathe like this, and you can't just tell the woman to breathe like this. You got to mirror it for her, and then she'll remember, and it'll be, you know, it's like second nature. So doing the Om sound, and then having the stomach massage, like having your partner maybe 3 times a week sit with you to do this exercise. Not 3 times a day like the mother is going to do, but maybe 3 times a week, you know, because the father's schedule is busier. Hopefully his schedule is so busy that he's out working, raising up money to pay the midwives, because midwives do have to, you know, pay, you know, take care of their families as well. And hopefully he's working and doing some other things and not there every day, because the woman shouldn't be working past, you know, 3 months or whatever. Hopefully they plan this, you know, prior to her getting pregnant, so that she's not also working, because her mind should really be totally on this baby. She should be a teacher. She should be like a teacher in a classroom, but the baby's in her womb, which is the classroom, and she's teaching this child during the pregnancy, so she doesn't have to deal with all those extra stress out there in the world, which she being stressed, dealing with that is going to stress the baby. So I encourage the mother and the father to make plans. And, you know, people tell me, oh, that's, you know, that's how they say that, that's a fantasy, or that it's not a reality. We make it a reality. You know, if we talk about we're going to be doing all these other things in our lives and creating, why do we stop there and say, well, that's if it was a perfect world. Hey, we make it perfect, you know, by our plan. So plan to have her not work during the pregnancy, and hopefully at least 2 years afterwards, you know, until, you know, you put the child in, if you're going to put the child in school, but until the child, you know, the child is weaned, possibly, if you're going to go 2 years. So you do the om sound, you do the sit with your partner and have him rub your stomach with oil, and I have them use lavender oil mixed with olive oil, and rub that on her stomach going down, you know, from the top of her stomach down. And this massages her, makes her feel good. It massages the baby. The child feels good inside. It's producing all these wonderful endorphins, and the father feels good too because he's relaxed now as well. And if she's been one of them women who won't let her touch her since she's been pregnant, he's feeling real connected right now. So it's very important to keep them bonded. And for the women who have been experiencing pain after the pregnancy, and that's one of the things they use as an excuse not to have sex, most of the time they've been having pain before that. Before she got pregnant, she just didn't say nothing. It's so important to understand that women are not supposed to be in pain when there's a sexual act happening. And if there's pain, she needs to talk with her midwife or talk with her doctor about it. We are so embarrassed when it comes to talking about that part of our body. And I've had so many women that I say, okay, you have to be comfortable with touching your vagina. You're going to have to get some olive oil, some that has not been used for anything else, it's just for your vagina, put it on your fingers, and start massaging your perineum area, because this will also cut down on what we say is pain in labor, because it's going to allow your perineum to be softer, to open up easier, you know, be more relaxed, so she doesn't have to have an episiotomy if she's going to have a baby in the hospital. She doesn't have to be cut, that her body's just going to stretch open. So at this point, usually women are like, I got to touch me? I'm like, well, yeah, it's your body, it's your vagina. In fact, I want you to look at your vagina every day so you know what it looks like, because some of us don't even look anymore, and we've never looked, we never touched ourselves, and this is why some doctors can get away with butchering the women, because they don't know what their vaginas look like anyway, and when they get sewed back up, like, it didn't look like it looked before, but hey, you didn't know because you didn't know what it looked like before. You know, it may not be working like it used to now. So this is a reality, okay? So we want to use the lavender oil because this is an essential oil that relaxes muscle, and I use it with massage clients who are not pregnant because it does relax the muscle tissue, and the uterus is a big muscle. And I always tell women to make friends with your uterus. It's your body. You know, this is what's going to open up. You know, this is what the baby's living inside here. Your cervix is going to open up. It's going to thin out. Make friends and understand your body. If you don't know what things look like, get a book. Get a book and start becoming comfortable with what the reproductive organs look like, so you can know what it is you're touching, you know, and why it's important to understand. And that whole pain thing, you know, women, you know, I don't know if you've been watching too many pornography movies or something where the women are screaming and hollering. I don't know, a lot of times these little young brothers will tell me they're trying to break the girl's back out. And
wow.
You know, they seriously, you know, some women are still, you know,
I'm going to beat it up.
Or beat it up, you know, maybe truth, you know, and not the sensitivity to the body. No, the body is gentle. I mean, sometimes you want a little intensity there, but it's still not supposed to be pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was watching a program the other day, and a woman was talking about cut me. I'm like, where do we? Why is it during the sexual act, you know, we fantasize about being cut or killed?
Violence.
Or strangle me, or, and you know, and some of the advertisements, you know, are like that. Women, you know, it's okay to beat up on a woman, you know, and to use these terms during the sexual activity. And if you have those terms that you're using during that time, you know, what are you thinking at other times for real about how you feel about the woman,
wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see, essential oils, massaging is important. The other oils used during during the labor, like if the woman is not, the contractions are slowing down or something, I always use jasmine. Jasmine is really powerful. Jasmine and little clary sage, that will help her to relax. Little clary sage can be a little euphoric, you know, but it helps get the job done. And it's so, you know, these scents, it makes everything so nice, you know. No matter where she's going to have this baby, everybody wants to get in that room because it smells so good, you know, and it's so peaceful. If you're at home, you know, having candles are really nice to have. If you're in the hospital, of course, you can't have the candles. And you really can't plug anything up, so you want to bring batteries. You might have a diffuser, aromalamp, bring batteries. I say also use music, because music therapy is very relaxing. And not just any music. I've found the best music is if you have ocean waves with a little bit of soft background music to go with it, whether it's flute, native flute, or how you say, the water, sounding like the ocean. Sometimes rain helps. And let's see, what else? The other kind of instruments, chimes, things like that. Those all help the body to relax. You want the body to be totally relaxed. It helps bring blood pressure down, too, if that's an issue. Some women do get high blood pressure in labor, so ylang ylang is another essential oil that helps with the high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And because women get angry sometimes in labor. And you have to be able to talk to the woman in labor. She's having these symptoms, so you have to say, honey, you know.
If you're having high blood pressure during the pregnancy, what would be some things that you can do to decrease high blood pressure during a pregnancy?
I find that increasing the calcium, some of the devices, I think calcium, magnesium. I find that using ylang ylang oil and lavender oil really helps. Getting their stomach massaged. You have to be careful with massaging women during pregnancy, because if you don't understand, there's certain places that you don't want to touch during pregnancy because it can stimulate contractions. But during the labor, those places like the soles of the feet and the shoulders, the lower back, all these are places that will help to strengthen contractions during the labor and also take the edge off the contractions during labor too. But during pregnancy, you just maybe massage the abdomen, her stomach with the oil, the center of her back, but not the lower or her shoulders.
Okay.
And that will help bring the blood pressure down. You need a diffuser. And a diffuser is, like an aromalamp, but actually it uses cold water. It doesn't heat the oil. Because when you heat the oil, you actually lose some of the properties. So aromalamps are good for setting the mood, you know, with the candle and all that. And it does help to calm and relax. But when you're talking about more serious therapeutic effects, you want to get a diffuser where the oil is not being heated, but the mist is still coming into the room. And that helps with the blood pressure. You want to also get to the bottom of what, you know, blood pressure usually deals with anger. You want to find out why she's angry, why she's upset. And there's so many women that are upset because they have to work every day. You know, I've come across a lot of women that are working up until the day of their due date, and they're angry about that because they're trying to work up to the due date so that they can have time off after they have the baby. You know, that's 6 weeks. That's a lot of time, right? But they're angry about that. But that's the way the system is working, so they don't say anything. So that's why I say really plan when you want to have a child. And because I teach how to give birth to a guy, it's about really setting the environment, you know, preparing, proper preparation by the mother and father, you know, to make sure that she's eating right, to make sure that the environment is right, to make sure that you have the money to get the kind of care that you want. There are a lot of, people that may help, but again, it's the commitment level and the skill level there. Anybody can sit with you, okay? But, you know, phone may ring and they may have to run home. You don't want a person to sit with you that they can't be with you the whole time, because your labor may only take 3 hours. That's a wonderful labor, because that means you've prepared, you've walked, like my grandmother said, you've been doing exercises, and I always say, don't raise your hands above your head. I know that's an old wise tale, but you know how many babies are being born today with those cords around their necks? And sometimes those cords around their necks actually are the reasons why they have any C-sections, because when they monitor them at the hospital, the heart rate goes down. And they're like, oh, you know, the heart rate went down in this monitor, and if it's true, you know, the cord is around the neck. And sometimes there is no cord around the neck, but the monitor just said that, and they end up with a C-section. So you want to eliminate any possibility of having a C-section. It's a major operation. And some women actually have side effects from it as far as back pain the rest of their life, or they have this pain down the leg, you know. So it's something that to not want to just have it, to schedule it. It's a major operation. Okay? Did I answer you?
Yes. We are going to go. Yes, you definitely answered my question.
I'm going to get one of those cam phones next time so I can see what y'all doing.
We're going to go on a brief.
Go ahead.
I want to go. Did you have a comment you want to make before we go on a brief break?
Well, I just want to ask her a question, but I'll ask after the break.
Okay, well, make sure you write it down so you don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go on a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to, of course, address our questions. And, of course, we want to, talk a little bit about, reproductive, any questions or comments we have about reproductive health. Our call-in number is 646-716-7675. We're going to go on break, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to give us a call after break. I knew you were going to be singing Empress.
Of course. I love that song. Could have warned me.
I muted myself out so I could sing along.
Hey, you know what? If something told me to do that, he could have told me. God. Thanks a lot. God.
We didn't catch that much of it, Empress, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Lydia. You see, we're having fun here.
Hey, that's good.
All right. Go ahead, Magic. Go ahead and address your question that you have for her.
I just wanted you to explain to us about birthing positions, like laying on your back as opposed to squatting or being in the bathtub.
Okay. Well, positions are very, very important. Some positions you want to use, for relaxing in the beginning of the labor. You don't want to you know, just rush right into things. You want to give the woman a chance to breathe. Now, you know, she can be laying on her back, like if it's the middle of the night and, you know, labor just started. It's just the beginning of the labor. She can rest even through those contractions. You know, the contractions may wake her up. She'll do a little breathing. And, you know, especially if she's learned how to do the OM sounds and stuff, and she can actually go back to sleep, you know. You know, and if she's been up all day or something, a lot of times women are so busy. So she may need that little rest to give her energy. The breathing, I would say, the position for back labor. Now, if a woman has been having back pain in her late pregnancy, I would ask her to really get her doctor or midwife to check to see what position the baby's in. Because if the baby's in a posterior position, meaning that the back of the baby's head is up against the backbone of her body, then down by the sacrum area, then that means that it's going to be pain and labor. And that's generally the only time I talk about pain, is when the baby's in that position, posterior position. That hurts. And the reason it hurts is because that part of the baby's head is up against that bone. When you want to drop that baby off of that bone, the way you do that is during the pregnancy, before you go into labor, is to get on your hands and knees and get your butt up in the air and stay that way for, you know, maybe 20 minutes or something, maybe 3 or 4 times a day, so that the baby understands that the baby needs to drop down and turn around. And you may want to have some pictures of the baby's head in, you know, down position. And when you look down, because if you look down at your belly and your baby's face is looking up at you, that means that head, you know, is on the back of your bone. That's why there's pain. If there's pain now, it's going to be super pain during the labor. And you want to turn the baby around before labor. If you're already in labor and the baby's in posterior position, you got to get on your hands and knees and get that baby to turn around, to get the baby off your back. And also someone applying pressure, using lavender oil, because like I said earlier, it's a pain reliever. Massaging that on the back, lower back, will also help, okay? So that position on hands and knees is also good if the baby's not in posterior position, but, you know, you want to rock with it. So learning how to rock during the pregnancy is important, because these techniques you're going to use during labor. You know, there'll be second nature. You say, oh, yeah, I'm having this challenge. Let me get on my knees. Or get on your side. The squatting position is really good because it opens up the vaginal area, opens it up real good. So squatting is good. You know, leaning. I teach women to practice with their partners by putting their hands on their shoulders, and his hands can be on her waist, and they're like rocking back and forth. And she's squatting, he's holding her up, and it's like a labor. I call it a labor dance, and it really helps to move and rock that baby down, because you know you're working with gravity. And I'm told, and I studied under Ibishi Carmichael in the Oakland, California area. I also studied under Susan Claypool with Renaissance Midwifery. And one of the things that I was taught while I was studying under them was that the reason why women are on their back in the first place was because of King Louis XIV of France, who wanted to see what women look like when they were having babies. So he was behind a curtain somewhere while the women were laying on their backs and he was watching these babies being born. So that was the reason for that position. That is not the best position to be in. You're working against gravity, having the babies that way. It's only for the convenience of those who are, you know, the doctors who are sitting down, you know, trying to catch the babies and stuff like that. It's not something that's healthy or, you know, the best for the mother or the baby. So you got the squatting. You have the, I like to put them on the father sitting, like, on a couch or the bed, and the mother on her hands. See, on her knees with her hands around his waist and her head to her side, leaning on his thigh, facing outward. That way she can breathe. It takes pressure off her back, and he has a good reach to use his hands to massage her back while she's in that position. Women really, really like that, and it's easy on the fathers to massage the back. I do put fathers to work. If they're going to be there, I put in the work so that they feel that they're a part of it, but only give them enough work that they're comfortable with, you know. So if a father's not comfortable with watching the mother make the OM sound, because I had one father of the mother, laboring woman, come to the room, and she was making the OM sound, and because he wasn't prepared, he didn't understand, he thought that she was moaning out of pain. I had explained to him, no, this is the sound you're supposed to make to help the baby come down, you know. But that's why when you have people come visit you, if you're going to be in labor, you know, make sure that they understand what's going on so that they don't distract from it or, you know, traumatize because they don't understand the natural way of having a child and what sounds and what positions it takes. So we talked about squatting. We talked about the back not being the best position. Let's see, what else? Some women like to stand and rock. You can do that. Some women have actually had their babies, like I said, with her head on his thigh, and she's squatting, or she can, it's like you take a chair, and you turn the chair around, and the back of the chair is facing the opposite direction, and you have your head on the chair, that position for people who may need a better visual. But I've had women that actually have babies in that position, where the midwife is behind her, and catches the baby while she's squatting in that position. So it's about being comfortable, okay? Being comfortable and being safe. And you can put pillows under the woman's knees, or if her head is down on the floor and she's on the floor. I've had nurses tell me, because I did actually help one of my grandchildren, who they were threatening to have my daughter have a C-section. I had my daughter on the floor with the pillows, and she was doing fine. Her husband was massaging her, and I was helping her breathe. We were a team working together. And the nurses came in the room, and the nurse was, like, amazed. She's like, she wanted someone to have helped her. She said to me she wished her mother had been there with her to help her have her baby. And she was all into it. As soon as she left out the room, she came back about 5 minutes later, pushed me, and said, "Women don't labor like this." So, you know, nurses, they work for the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they may be friendly, they have to do what the doctors say. So obviously what happened to her is that she went out the room and the doctors got on her butt and she had to come back in and try to get me to leave, because their intent was to have my child have a C-section, and my intent was to do whatever I needed to do to help her to have the baby naturally. And she did. It was a case, which is how I even know about these physicians. Sometimes, like I said earlier, I've had to go through some things to be able to help teach others, and that was one of those things that I had to learn about. I had to actually call my midwifery instructor to come under, how you say, under cloak, because we couldn't let the hospital know that she was a midwife. But she came in, and she worked some things. She put some oil up inside the cervix and got it softened up, and because when the cervix swells, that causes pain too. And depending on what position you've been in, or what challenge you've had during the labor, that's where the pain comes from also. So she was able to get the, use a certain oil. And I don't like mentioning too much when it goes into detail like that, because some things, you know, you definitely have to have the midwife do. I don't want people going off doing some things that I mentioned that they're not equipped to understand or to handle, and then there's a problem later on, and people be calling me like, "Well, Lee just said," like, no, you have to be trained to do certain things. But, but that's why, you know, explaining that some of the things I've had just on-hand experience with and challenges, which is why I can teach a lot of what I'm teaching today, is because of what I've went through. A lot of my training was not formal training. It's been about experience, which is in my numbers. My numbers speaks to that. So, let's see. Did I answer those questions?
Yeah.
Empress, did you have a question before I see if our caller has a question?
Yeah, I did actually. Post vaginal care or wound care, like directly after birth. I know some women, when they go to the hospital, they have to be sewn up and things of that nature. Like, what post womb or post vaginal care is involved in
postpartum,
natural birth and womb birth? Huh?
I was just saying postpartum care.
Right. Not necessarily just postpartum, but just, like, directly after, you know, your body has gone through so much that, you know, you've had to, basically your vagina's had to open up to have a child, you know, and so, of course, it's stretched and things of that nature. So some of the things that are done, you know, with the midwife and things of that nature.
We do cyst baths are important. Like, right after the baby, we ask women not to take baths, you know. A shower, they may be able to do the shower, but after they have a baby, And even after they urinate, we ask them not to wipe themselves with tissue, but to use like a perineum bottle. And different midwives will suggest different oils to use, diluted, of course, in the water to keep bacteria and infection away. But the vagina is a wonderful thing. You know, it closes back down. Now, those who've had stitches and all that, they sitz baths are also good for them, and it takes a while for them. You know, those stitches, I think now they have the stitches dissolve right into the body or something. I don't think they have to cut them anymore. But just basically not having sex, you know, like the doctors would say 6 weeks now. And, you know, from my training as a midwife, the midwife said that that was really for the men because the men couldn't wait six more weeks, you know. Mm-hmm. That's all they could wait for. And now, before they want to have sex, right? But it's important that the woman's body is healed. And for some women, it may be like 8 weeks or, you know, 9 weeks. You know, one thing my grandmother taught me was that it took 9 months for your body to get that way, you know, gradually open up to that point, and it's going to take the body some time also to heal. So even though the male may be ready to be sexual because he's waited, especially if the woman didn't have sex during the pregnancy, that it's not so much his body, but it's her body that has to be taken care of. And she has to speak up on her own behalf about that. The midwives can talk to him too, but oftentimes men don't like coming in to talk to the midwives or, you know, the care appointment. But the woman needs to know that she has to take care of that part of her body and understand, like, you know, some people have sex 2 weeks after. Well, yeah, but your body, again, is going to tell on you later on in life. You know, mm-hmm. It's your vagina, your reproductive organs are going to be a little damaged. Okay, so, again, we're talking about the incontinence, and I'm looking at commercials. I don't know if y'all are looking at commercials, but I'm seeing these commercials where it's advertising, you know, you got a little leakage, or, you know, talk to your doctor, you know, there's side effects. They're not telling you what these things could be caused from. Some of these things are caused from having birth and not taking care of the body properly. A lot of these things are caused from anal sex, and no one wanted to talk about anal sex. You know, we're taught just to tell y'all to put on a condom and everything. But the problem with that is that that part of the body was not made to open up like that. And if you don't know
Thank
how to
you.
Care for the anus, then,
Thank
you know.
Thank you. Can you say that again? Can you just say that again?
The anus, that part of the body was not made for to be entered into. It is a place where we release, okay? And you can tell that because, see, the vagina, it opens up 10 centimeters, and that baby's head, you know, comes out. The anus, it opens up, you know, but eventually it stays open. It does not close back down. It wasn't made to close back down. You stretch it up, it's going to stay up like that. And so that's
why
that we have more Depends diapers, and, you know, that's the name brand, but hey, there's so many adult diapers now because people are doing things with their body don't understand. My teachers out here in Atlanta have shared with me more and more about the middle school girls that are sexual, but they're having anal sex. Mm. And some of them are ended up pregnant, and they're in the emergency room and didn't know they were pregnant or didn't know how they got pregnant. Because they say they were virgins. If you have an anal sex, you're not a virgin, number one. And number two, yes, you can get pregnant because the penis doesn't necessarily have to go up inside of the vagina. But if you have the body fluid, the semen, which carries the sperm, and the woman is fertile at the time, with that body fluid going anywhere in or around the vagina, which it will do, especially if people are saying that they can't get pregnant, so they're not wearing a condom or anything, well, you know, you have the body fluid that will also go up inside the vagina, and that's all it takes for her to get pregnant because the sperm knows how to swim the rest of the way. So, but in the process of having anal sex, the body is being broken down. And I bring these things up. You know, this has never accessed me whenever I go on a program or when I go into the schools and I teach, but it's happening. And because it's not being brought up, I always bring it up. Because I know we're still at that place where what you do behind closed doors is your own business and all that. I see too many broke-down women. You know, I see mm-hmm. women that are broke-down coming to me with their first babies because of things that they've done in their earlier years that nobody shared with them could be damaging to them. You know, I've seen too many women who are so anemic that there's dark circles on their eyes and their bodies just look so limp, but everyone is praising them because they got 6 or 7 children. You know, but look at her body, you know.
Right.
Pay for that.
There's a question or a comment in the chat room about study the constituents of soy and their effects on the body. Do you have any comments in reference to soy products?
Okay, so soy, we were talking about how to live the same way from soy products anyway, and some people are very allergic. You know, there's a lot of allergic reactions to soy, and it affects different people in different ways. And I guess whatever the person's weakness in their body is, that's how the soy affects them. But soy, from my doing research on it and studying a little bit about it, I know that it is supposed to affect the brain. It's supposed to, what I read was it somehow changes the size of the brain, and they say with males, it affects them as far as their sexual preference. You know.
Wow.
The in a body, you know. So there's a lot of different things said about soy. We were taught in a nation to stay away from soy. Period. You know, and a lot of people do soy milk for their children, and they're not the healthiest. You know, when it comes to their health, soy also also produces mucus just like dairy.
Mm-hmm.
So products, and it's so interesting because it's so commercialized. It's one of the highest commercialized products out there. And you know, and I come from, I have how you say, my stepmom is Filipino, so I've grown up around that culture, and I know how they do meat. You know, in the Asian culture, they would take a piece of meat and they would chop it up in small pieces, and you have more vegetables and rice than you have meat at a meal. But we've taken the soy and said, well, you know, they do it in Asia or whatever, but in Asian countries, they never took a big piece of soy steak. You know, here in the Americas, you want to get a soy burger. You know, you want to get soy everything, and it's not the same proportions as when they did soy in the other Asian countries. So you have people that may have headaches, or you have their asthma that's increased, okay? Or you have, some dental issues, you know. I know for me, being allergic to soy, it actually caused me to have bone loss, you know.
Wow.
So that's
wow.
Again, I say, you know, I've had a lot of experience with different things, and that's why I teach. And I've done,
a lot of children are being fed with these milk formulas that are based on soy.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to, you know, they also tell you about a lot more allergies these days, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's
why.
True.
Yeah. That makes sense. You have a lot of children who are
more asthmatic children.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely
you have a lot more children with eczema as well.
Eczema.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So all those things. And get back to the basics. Back to basics.
Mm-hmm.
So children, doesn't even...
Not only soy, but whey and gluten as well. You have a lot of children that are affected by drinking soy milk. You know, soy milk has whey in it. It has gluten and all kinds of, you know, artificial, supposedly minerals and nutrients is in it. So.
Stick to what's natural. Breastfeeding is so natural. You know, the mother has to eat healthy. And, you know, some of the children, if mother's getting a lot of unnatural products, and that's going into her milk, and her milk is only as healthy as what she eats.
Right.
Women's nose. And sometimes, you know, when they're allergic to the milk, it's also about how the mother's thinking. Because if she's getting in arguments or she's getting into negative thoughts, that is transmitted through her milk. And
right.
The baby won't like the milk. It will taste tainted. It will taste sour, you know. So it's amazing how our bodies are. But, you know, our bodies are very healing to our partners, to our children. But it can also be a source of, illness if we don't take care of our own bodies as women, you know. So it's important to know that during the pregnancy, she should have pure positive thoughts. Not be around anyone that's negative, and so that means she may have to let go of her gossiping friends. And her husband, who's used to coming home and telling her all his problems and issues, and she soothes him, she's not to soothe him during a pregnancy. He's going to have a other support group, and I don't mean other women, you know, other men who he can hang out with or friends that are supportive of the marriage. Because sometimes you have those brothers that say, well, you know, if she ain't with you, then you need to get you someone else on the side. That doesn't help anything. It's also not a good idea to be talking about another wife while the woman is making new life, because now she's going to feel inadequate, and now she got some other emotional issues going on. And, you know, the thing about the multiple wife thing, which I know y'all didn't bring up, but comes up all the time in my practice, is that...
I'm pretty sure it does.
I can see them coming, you know? But the thing is, the women feel so insecure already. And if you're a woman and your man has talked about having another wife and you felt that, wow, I talked him out of that, he's just going to be with me, I'm going to be with him, it's going to come up later on in a relationship, and really need to stop fooling each other and to be honest about it. Either the woman can deal with it or she can't. Either the man knows how to properly deal with that, you know, because you got to be able to treat everyone equally. And, you know, and it's not that you're supposed to get a woman to help you. That was a practice that was actually put in place to help women who were, without mates.
Right.
Without protection. It was not ever supposed to be, well, I'm going to get me a queen so she can help me build my whatever.
Right.
You're supposed to already have enough built up in order to take on another woman. You know, that's just how it was. And I have to say that because a lot of women don't study and they don't know that that's what it was designed for in the first place. So it was all about protection of the woman and, you know, and protection of the children. And so
right.
Go back to men, you know, and women and men, brothers, because some brothers have the numbers for having more than one woman. I see it in their numerology charts. And some women can deal with it too. But if you know in your heart that you cannot deal with that, be honest and upfront. You know, if you're as a man, you know, yes, she has you now. You may not have any other woman on your mind, but because she's the only one, and so you're going to go, okay, well, I'll put this on the back burner. I'm just going to deal with her right now. That issue is going to come up, and it's going to be a major source, a major problem in the relationship. And so we need to really stop fooling each other and stop settling, you know, and changing our standards because of what someone else may or may not want. And that's for both male and female. Because that honesty is so key. Because it can work in some families. Multiple partners have worked. So I'm not against it. All I'm saying is be honest and know what you're dealing with and whether you can handle that or not. And if he says that's what he wants and now he says he doesn't want it and you're fine with the relationship, know that it's going to come back up. And it may come back up after you have like 5 children. And now he may say, you know what, I think you need help. So I'm going to get another wife to help you. Well, what happens when she gets pregnant? Because oftentimes they don't go get an older woman. They go get a younger woman.
Okay.
I mean, that's
can nobody, you briefly...
Nobody upset anybody.
Oh, no. Not at all. Not at all. I have a question in reference to condoms and their usage and their effects on the cervix and the womb.
Okay. Well, condoms, you know, condoms have been around a long time, since in World War I.
I specifically talk about latex condoms.
Latex came out, you know, they first had the lambskin, and then they had the latex, I think maybe in the 40s or something. But the latex, some people are actually allergic to latex. And we know people have allergies because now you can go into the store and they got latex-free gloves, they got latex-free. If you just walk down the aisle of stuff where they have the little rubber stuff, they have latex-free everything. So wouldn't you think that latex is affecting a lot more than we initially thought of? And so those more infections or, you know, irritations in the vaginal area, the cervix, because of the latex, it's like you got to use something else. So condoms are important, and they definitely protect against some diseases. They don't protect 100% because, you know, condoms are originally made to protect against getting pregnant anyway. And so these other diseases such as chlamydia and gonorrhea protects 50% against that. It protects against HIV 85%. Syphilis about 25% to 40% is what some of the studies have said. So that means that you may not, you may be protected more against HIV, but you're not protected against syphilis. And so
wow.
So the parts that syphilis creates means that there's now an entry point for HIV, okay, for your immune system to be affected.
They don't tell you that. They just give you this sweeping percentage, like condoms are 9.9% effective. Well, effective against everything or just certain things? Like, wow.
The other thing that you don't hear a lot about is that latex condoms in some cases have been a cause of cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that irritation again, and this is why I say for women, if it's uncomfortable, say something. You know, because you can use some products, and even like the spermicide, they used to put, Nonoxynol 9 on the condom and told people that this was going to help protect them against HIV. And then they found out that the Nonoxynol 9 broke down the tissue, and,
mm-hmm.
the body so much so that it actually caused an entry point. Can you imagine
mm-hmm.
those workers that had to go back out on the street like, I told you, I gave you free condoms, but actually those free condoms that I gave you caused you to actually become infected.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they
were
wow. years back, like, I got to face these people. I'm glad I wasn't in on that one. I learned about that. That came up after I started getting my training. But it's just, the latex is, for a lot of people, a source of irritation. And if the woman doesn't say anything, if the man doesn't say anything, you got to ask questions. If you're having issues with your body, say something. Go get checked. Find out what it is instead of suffering. A lot of women suffer in silence. And then when I ask them, I'm like, why did you do that? They were not feeling good about whatever they were doing, but they wanted to please their partners. I'm like, but why didn't you say something? They either were afraid they were going to go somewhere else or their ego was going to be damaged. They wanted their partners to feel good. I'm like, why? If you're feeling so bad, why was that such an important thing for you?
I'm not comfortable or something's hurting, you need to say something.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that, too, because not only is latex used in condoms, but it's also used in gloves when you go to your gynecologist. So you think about that, how many women suffer in silence when they go to their doctors thinking that they are trained professionals. If you're uncomfortable even then, you need to say something to your doctor.
Yeah,
and don't just take it for granted, that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I had, my doctor put that on my chart when I was going, on a regular basis. I'm one of those people who are allergic to latex, so I can't deal with anything that's latex.
Okay.
Anything.
Yeah.
So what about the lambskin and the alternative condoms? Like, what are the not only effectiveness, but the effect to the body?
Well, I haven't heard any negative effects as far as the lambskin goes. But the thing is, the lambskin does not protect against some of the other STDs or STIs or venereal diseases because the pores
mm-hmm.
are too open. And so the other, cells of the other STDs are smaller than those pores, and so it comes through. So it's not for protection against diseases. Now, it's effective against pregnancy, again, because the cell of the sperm and stuff is larger than the pores. So it can't get through.
Hmm.
All right,
write
that
down.
I'm gonna.
Oh, he's quiet writing. Okay, I got it.
We have a caller from 862 area code. Would you like to state your name and where you're calling from? Area code 862.
Hello.
Yes. May I have your name
I'm Charity.
And where you're calling from?
Hi, my name is Charity, and
hi,
I'm calling from Virginia through a sign language interpreter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, wow. Do you have a question or a comment?
I have just learned so much from you guys, and it's just fascinating to listen to this conversation and all the info that you guys have, but I do have a question. I'm wondering about, when a baby's born, how can you know, how they say that you can control the sex and all that, how do they do that? Like, how you've heard that they can control what kind of baby they're going to have, boy or girl? Like, how does that happen?
Well, guys, there's a lot of different theories on that. At one time they were saying that boy sperm swim faster than the girl sperm. And so they were at one time telling women to chart themselves, chart when they're fertile, know their fertile time, because they would have to take the temperature with a basal thermometer and also check the signs. Like sometimes women would have a little sensitivity in the fallopian tubes, like certain times in a month, between 11 and 14th of the month, you may be a little tender on the left side or the right side of your abdomen. Usually that's because you're releasing an egg or you're fertile at that time, and the egg is about to be released from your fallopian tubes. So they say watch the signs of the body. And so when you have sex, you'd wait till you were fertile, and you would go ahead and then have the man release his semen inside of you so that the sperm that were the male sperm would swim faster. Because the female sperm is slower but lives longer. And so if you'd wait until you're already, if you do it the other way around, then the male sperm would die off and then the female sperm would be left. That's what I was told years ago. Now, they've done so many things have changed over the years. I've been watching a lot of these science programs. And the things that we thought were true 10 years ago may not be true today. So it's important to keep up to date with that. But that's the latest information that I have, was that the male sperm swims faster. And so, you wait until you're fertile before you release that into your body. And then also they said certain positions as far as...
One moment. I think that maybe there was a little bit of a misunderstanding there. After the baby's born, how does the man control not having sex for all that time because they have to wait? I'm sorry, the interpreter had an error. How does the man control himself with no sex for that time period, all those weeks after the woman's given birth, because they have to wait for her to heal because she's in pain?
Okay.
So what does the man do?
That's a totally different. I'm like, control. Okay, well, I teach my young men, and some of the older men that will listen to me, at a certain age, men don't want to hear you, but the younger guys that I teach them how to do different breathing techniques, because really, the breathing, like the meditation, helps with discipline of the mind and the body, and so when you can get them to have control, because a lot of times there's so much temptation out there anyway, with the videos and stuff like that, and so a lot of the guys, opportunity presents themselves, they're ready. But when you have them understand that they control their mind first, which will control the body, so the breathing techniques, the deep breathing, and being able to bring that energy back up inside of them, because really they shouldn't be releasing unless they want to have a baby anyway, as far as sperm goes, because that's weakening their life force energy. And so when I teach some men about doing the breathing techniques, and some books you can find, it's called the Dallas, one book is Dallas Exology, it's called the Deer Exercise, and females can do it, the Deer Exercise too, to actually prevent having menstrual cycles, because the only reason why we should be having menstrual cycles is not because our body is dirty, but because the egg has not been fertilized, and so it has to come out. But we really should stop having menstrual and bleeding or hemorrhaging every month. It comes with understanding how to do breathing techniques for the male and female. So the man, what stimulates us to be more sexual anyway, have him stop watching the television, the videos, where the women are partially dressed, so he's not stimulated that way. May want to cut down on the meat products, because a lot of the meat is fed hormones, which stimulates that desire to be more sexual. That comes up because, the hormones that are given for the maturity of the animal, which also means that we're getting more of the sexual hormones as well in our bodies, so we're stimulated more. It also affects the roughness of how we're interacting with each other too, okay? So have them do deep breathing, have them focus. Oh, men don't like this. Marjoram oil just came to me. Marjoram, M-A-R-J-O-R-A-M, is an oil that helps to suppress that intense desire for sex. Some people want a little bit too much sexual energy, and they don't, and their partners don't match that energy, or like you say, after you have a baby. So marjoram oil, and in fact, people use marjoram all the time. Marjoram is a spice or an herb that people put in spaghetti or other seasonings that they use when they're making sauces. So it's not something that people aren't familiar with, but it also comes in oil form. So an essential oil form, you can use an aroma lab, you know, use in a room, an environment, and just don't stimulate that desire. Okay? Okay. You're writing down things again?
We're always writing down things.
Did the caller get the answer that they were looking for?
Yes, yes. It seems like they hung up right toward when she was ending what she Lydia was saying.
Hung up to listen, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, something else you mentioned about postpartum care earlier. Rose is a real important oil to use after postpartum period.
Essential oil.
Rose, yeah, because you know how people get flowers after they have babies.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's traditional to give roses. The rose, the scent of rose, you know, it must be roses that have the scent, because the scent actually helps the uterus to contract down.
Wow.
So that's very important to have rose oil for postpartum care.
Mm.
You know, when women bleed after they have the baby, you know, you're going to bleed for like 5 days. It's almost like a cycle. But each day, it gets lighter and lighter and lighter. Some women have experienced, like, even after 2 weeks, they're still bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they're still bleeding is because they're lifting things and they're doing too much. They're not supposed to be bleeding. If women recognize that they're bleeding past that 5 days, it is because they probably lifted up something heavier than a baby. They've probably been walking around too much. You know, they're supposed to be recuperating. And every time the baby sleeps, the mother's supposed to be sleeping too. When you get help for postpartum care, it's not to help take care of the baby. It's to help take care of the house, take care of the rest of the family, the wash, the cooking, all that. It's not for someone to like, oh, well, let me take the baby while you sleep. No. The mother and the baby's energy should be harmonizing and synchronizing itself so that when the help leaves, they're on the same pattern. And sometimes this is why that there's a lot of disruption. You know, the patterns of the sleep pattern for the baby, because mothers sleep, but someone else is holding the baby. Mothers should be sleeping when baby's sleeping. Or when baby's sleeping, mother is up trying to clean up or do something. No, either hire a postpartum doula or hire, you know, have your family come out and help. You know, in the olden times, we had cousins and sisters and relatives, female family members that would come and help out after the woman had the baby. We're so separated now. And our communities are not built up that we really understand how to help women after they have the babies. You know, we still haven't produced that woman's circle that I'm hearing about. So we need to start thinking in terms of that, especially those women who want to give birth to guys. You need to have the support, because we depend too much on the men to help out in certain ways. Men do not have the same chemical hormonal makeup as women.
Right.
So yes, some things, but you know, to have a man sit with a baby, that's asking a lot. And you know, every now and then you hear a case where somebody shook the baby to death, or you know, that, you know, somebody snapped and it's, oh, that horrible man. You weren't supposed to leave that man with a child, because you know, even women who don't breastfeed have a different sensitivity level to babies. Okay, it's just a certain hormone that goes through the body when you're breastfeeding, just like there's a certain hormone that goes through the body for labor and delivery. And that's why, you know, this woman cry a lot right after they have the baby, maybe the third or fourth day when the milk comes in. There's this intense crying and a lot of uneasiness. That's because the hormones are changing in the body. The labor hormones are leaving, the breastfeeding hormones are coming in, and there's a little bit of clashing, or how you say it, a little transition period where the woman just feels really, really teary-eyed and, you know, everything doesn't seem to be going right. That's what that is. Postpartum blues is real. There are women, and you know, it's been in the news before, maybe killed, you know, 5 children, maybe after the 5th child, that, hey, they just went off and killed up all the children because of these hormones that they experience. Now, it's not as intense as that for everyone, but you do have some women like, wow, they're calling family members, come get the baby, I can't handle it. And they really want to throw the baby out the window, for real. That's a real fact. You know, a lot of that has to do with stress. If the woman does not get the relief, if she's not getting the proper care, the proper support, there's going to be some hormonal issues there. So really want people to understand, women need help after they have the baby.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have a little under a minute left for everyone who's listening live stream. So if you want to hear the remainder of the call, it is 64, or the remainder of the show, rather. The number is 646-716-7675. Lydia, could you give out your website information again?
Okay. For the purpose of this show, since we're talking a lot about babies and childbirth care, A Rising Piece of Art, and that's ARISINGPEACEOFART.com. And on my website, arisingpieceofart.com, I have a page for fathers as well. It has something to do with fathers having vision, because it's important for the fathers to understand how he gets his information into the child through the mother, through communication with the mother, because the mother is the first teacher, the first nurse, and we produce from our minds in our children. Whatever the mother's thinking during the pregnancy, that is what the baby will, how the baby will reproduce, you know, chemically as well as emotionally, physically, whatever's going on around that mother. My grandmother used to say, keep a pregnant woman happy. When you keep a pregnant woman happy, you had a happier society. We have so much anger and so much hate going on because of the way the women feel during their pregnancy. They're not feeling supported, not feeling that help, not focusing on the baby, but focusing on work, problems, and issues, that this is what's going into our children. So also it talks about that on my webpage, also the essential oils that are helpful, the foods, there's a nutrition page on there for the moms. I even have a page on there that shows what the participants are learning from the classes that I've been teaching. Occasionally I will do a class where people mail information to me. I send them out assignments. That has worked for some people. I will probably be starting an online class soon. I've been considering that.
I would definitely be interested in that.
Yeah.
I'm considering that. See how much energy that takes. I'm working with a brother now with the website HIV Anon, where we're talking more about people coming together. You know, they thought a lot of people would be dying, more than what is dying now, from the HIV, you know, predictions and stuff. They thought that everybody that was HIV infected was going to infect their partners. We are now hearing more and more about people living with HIV for 25 years and their partners never being transmitted the HIV virus too. And so we're going to be promoting more of couples talking about their experience, you know, because Magic Johnson and Cookie aren't the only ones, you know, but there's not enough talk about that, and also about people being loved, because people who are isolated, who don't feel cared for, the stress is so real, and that also breaks down our immune system,
right?
So, which is very detrimental to those who are HIV positive. And when I teach about being HIV positive or HIV prevention or intervention, I don't teach it from a doom or gloom place. I teach it from a place where, how do you manage this for your health and for those people involved with you, okay? I talked earlier about all my different experiences, just so that you know, as far as I know, I have not been diagnosed as being HIV, well, I take that back. I was diagnosed as being HIV positive years ago, and I had them retested. And because so many people, I've learned over the years dealing with birthing and other things, that when you get a diagnosis, double check it, get it checked again. So many of us just let it go. And had I gone along with the doctor at that time, I probably would be dead today, because there are a lot of drugs, you know, back in the 80s that have killed people, you know, because they're still trying to figure out what drugs work and what don't, what the side effects are. And because I was one, based on my training as a woman having children and questioning everything because of birth, I questioned that diagnosis and found out that I was not positive. So I speak from that place. I do have consultants that I work with and partners that I work with who are positive and who are married and whose partners have not been infected, and they've survived by not dying of AIDS because of the love and relationships and the support that they have of their families. So we'll be talking about that. Also, we'll be talking about numerology, doing people's numbers and stuff. We didn't do that today, but that's what I'm really known for as well here in Atlanta, is by helping people understand their life purpose by telling you about your date of birth and your name and all that and what you're born to do. When we do that with our children, having these babies, we understand who these children are coming in based on their numbers, which is why in our ancient time we were able to build, and people were happy with the work that they did in building, because they were doing the work that they were born to do. And this is why we were successful. Now we're in jobs that we don't like, feel stuck, don't understand why we're drawing the people to us in our lives, and it's because we don't know who we are and what we're born to do. So I help the parents to understand when they have these babies, this is who your child is. If you can give your child a name that harmonizes with who they've chosen to show up as, because we do choose our birth dates because of the skills that we want to have and what we want to do in this lifetime, when you choose a name to go with it that matches that, then there's no confusion as to what it is we're supposed to be doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
definitely.
Definitely. And with I have one other question before we end the show, but I want to extend a invitation for you to come back at your convenience to touch on what you just spoke about, because that is very important, and the people in our community and our audience need to be aware of that which you just spoke about with the naming of the baby, the fact that the babies and the spirits that come choose their dates of birth and, you know, for certain skills they want to have in this particular lifetime.
Right. That's so true. And and we choose the
question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And we choose our parents, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes. See, we definitely have to have you come back, Sister Lydia. The question I had was in reference to what do we do with the placenta and the afterbirth, you know, taking that home, and what do we do with that?
Well, the hospital will take it, and they'll make, you know, product, hair products and stuff out of it.
Yes.
Some of the hair care folks or whatever that industry is called, you know, at about 20 years
ago. One of the products is Haskin Placenta. They tell you right there what it is.
Okay, and that's where it comes from. It comes from the woman at the birth. Now, the hospitals may get at least they were getting $500 per placenta years ago. I don't know how much they're getting. But they never ask the woman. They just say, oh, we got to get this out of here because it's a waste product. We got to get rid of it. Yeah, they get rid of it, all right. They get money off of that. They could at least ask a woman if you want to sell it, it's hers, you know. But they don't. They take it because we don't understand the value of it. What some women do, will actually plant it. You know, they'll find a place in a garden, and they'll plant it in the ground, and they'll mark it with a tree so that when as the tree grows, it's a reminder to the child that the placenta was here and this is what you came through. Some cultures, they actually will dry it out, you know, freeze it, dry it out, and they'll use it as protein. They'll eat it, you know, take pieces of it and eat it, you know. So you might want to know what's in your stew the next time you eat it, but that's what some people do. So those are different things that are done with it. But if you want to take it, if you're in the hospital, you want to take it, you want to have someone definitely bring a plastic bag or some kind of container to take it immediately out, because if you don't take it, have someone take it away from the hospital, you know, right after the labor and everything, they will not let you have it, and they'll make up all kinds of excuses as to why you can't get it.
Wow.
Yeah, I've read about the importance of burying the placenta, having it be not just the woman do it, but have it be in a family event where the husband or the father is involved, as well as the child is involved in the burial process. And, you know, you plant flowers or a garden around it, or like you said, a tree. So as that garden grows, that child is reminded of their growth and things, and the growth of that family.
And you're right. Generally, it was something that the father did, because, you know, fathers have a role too in this whole thing. So yeah, that was something that really connected him.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if either of the other two sisters on the line didn't have any other questions.
I just want to say you've made pregnancy just feel like the most magical experience.
Definitely. Yeah, I would definitely say that.
I feel that way as well. And right now you're speaking to three women who have not birthed babies yet.
Oh, good. I like new people.
And that is the main reason why when I heard you on with, you know, Tanya and friends with Diva Mama, yes, Tanya, I had to have you come on to this show, because the information that you are sharing or have shared and hopefully will come back to us and enlighten us and give us some more information is of utmost importance to our community and to young women who want to have children and are seeking to have them, you know, naturally. You know, this is just very good information for us to have. So I just want to tell you thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes,
for
definitely. You took the fear out of it.
Right.
You took the fear definitely out of it.
We got to remove the fear. We got to know, you know, and the fear is also another thing that causes pain. So, you know, I spend my time when I have the classes – removing all the fears, you know, answering all the questions so we can get to the work that's going to help women have the babies in a way that they can deal with and manage. And I've had so many women that never had pain. I've had one sister who was, and she's the only one that ever went 8 centimeters and could have her baby, you know, and she did that twice. But I remember she got to a point in her labor, and she's like, she's just breathing heavy. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? Because you can look at a person and see it in the face, something's wrong. You know, we're trained to do that. And she says, well, I'm waiting for the pain to happen. I'm waiting. And I'm like, baby, if you're not feeling no pain, why are you trying to call pain? You're not going to have pain. It's not coming. This is as difficult as it gets. We have to understand that our bodies were made to have the children. And stop letting people tell us it's supposed to be painful, and stop telling us, because doctors are really saying that the reason we're having problems with the female body now is because we're giving birth. It's not that reason. It's because we're not giving birth naturally the way our bodies were made to give birth. That's why we have these problems later on.
Wow.
So we have to really get back with the midwives. And I don't mean certified midwives. Like I say, I know one who's excellent. But when I'm looking at this baby channel and I'm seeing, they tell me that this is a natural birth, and I'm looking at a woman laying on her back, and I see the midwife sitting right next to her, and she's breathing and breathing not in a way that will help her to have this baby naturally, I'm like, they are giving people a whole misconception of what natural birth is. Just because it comes out the vagina don't mean it's natural.
Right.
That's just like food. Because it comes out the ground doesn't necessarily mean it's organic.
That's right. That's true. So we have to, and I like how you said that. I'm going to use that.
Well,
we know our bodies. Glad you all haven't had babies yet, so you don't have to, you know, be filled with the fear that you can be empowered. And that's what it's about. It's the rites of passage. When you come through having a child naturally and you plan to have it naturally, it's the most empowering thing. It's nothing that you can't do. You feel like you can do anything. In fact, our bodies take on so much pressure, and it's scientifically proven how powerful we are having these children. So, you know, that mother's wit and all that stuff, that's why women, you know, who usually have their babies naturally, they're more secure and they're more, how you say, they understand more about things and child care, where the women that have had to have all this intervention, it leaves them doubting their own abilities to mother. You know, something happens. That's why it's a rites of passage. Something's actually going on spiritually, not just physically, but spiritually and mentally when you're having a baby. And I thank y'all so much for allowing me to come and talk about my favorite stuff. I talk about this just as much as I talk about numbers. I'm at the job and talking to folks all the time, and someone say, they say, oh, are you pregnant? You know, I see a little bump. I'm like, oh, you know, it's in store. Because I want to share. I want to share before the fear sets in. And usually when, by the time a woman is 8 months and they're really big, and, you know, I ask them, I say, well, are you going to have natural childbirth? And they say, yeah, I'm planning to have it, you know. And I say, well, do you know how to breathe? No. Have you taken a class? No. These things don't come naturally anymore because we haven't been passing it down through generations. You know, and that's why we have to have classes now, you know, to get this information back, because you can't just go up in there and thinking you're going to have natural. Yeah, it may come out natural, but you are going to be in pain because you didn't know how to relax your body. You didn't know you're supposed to walk, you know, until you break a sweat. And you didn't understand that labor is about work. It's like a triathlon event. You're going to be doing a lot of different things with your body, so the muscles have to be toned. This is why the exercise is important, you know, stretching, you know, breathing, all that, because when you go through labor, you want to be able to endure. The iron is important, because if you don't have enough iron, you don't have enough oxygen in your blood, and you're gonna tire out. You're going to say, oh, God, I'm tired. Give me the drugs. You're going to start asking for the drugs, and they're going to be more than happy to give it to you. So, in fact, they'll kick people out if they tell you. That's why it's good for your friends to know, your family members to know, because when they start offering, it starts sounding pretty good. You know, until you know that later on, you know, the reason why your child is having this problem in school is because of the drugs. They had a case one time where a whole community of teens had committed suicide when they got a certain age. And they traced it back to this one hospital of this one drug, and I cannot remember right now what that drug was, but the one drug that all the mothers took in labor for pain.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Older.
Wow. I mean, y'all...
Well, I'm glad you're in Atlanta, because I definitely know who to call when I do have my
child. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way to fly you out to wherever I'm at.
I know exactly who I want to call.
I definitely want to express this. Anyone who is in the Atlanta area or surrounding, please visit her website. Please pick up a phone, give her a call. You know, these particular services in terms of midwifery, doula, you know, everything that we discuss and more are of utmost importance that we support our own in our communities. So, like I said, you are more than welcome to come back to discuss anything. Anything. You know, I will follow up with you, you know, in a while and see when we can get you to come back on at your convenience.
Thank you.
But we definitely appreciate you taking your time out today and discussing everything that we touched on today. So,
thank you.
And I will be speaking with you soon, Lydia.
Thank you. You all take care.
You too, sister.
baby.